State Affairs Committee is in session. We have a quorum, Senators Ray, Petula, and Vic Fisher are present. We have three bills before us. First one, Senate Bill 147 by Senator Petula, Act relating to safeguarding self-identity and address of motor vehicle operators involved in accidents. Senator Petula, would you like to discuss this?
Yes. My administrative assistant, Anna, is going to testify on this. And thank you for having it first off because of another immediate conflict I have.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I want to thank you for the opportunity to come before you to testify on Senate Bill 147. As you know, my name is Anna Petula. The senator would like to propose the following amendment, which I believe is placed in your packet. On page 1, line 18, following the word operators, we would like to insert name and so that it would read, by providing the operator's name and vehicle license number. The intent of this piece of legislation is basically to protect home residential identification by providing an alternative method for obtaining sufficient information to locate the individual or individuals involved in an accident. Mainly, the reason for the amendment was basically to protect residential location. And we feel that enough information will be supplied with this amendment to the statutes that residential location is not needed. It is an alternative. It is an option. Yes, excuse me.
And
yes.
Would the corollary to that be to remove on line 22 in the beginning name and?
Yes, to remove, excuse me. Yes, it would be.
Senator Rohde is present.
Please come, President. I'll be right back up as soon as I make a couple more comments downstairs.
Please go ahead.
This would be an alternative, and it provides an option to the individual. It's not, you don't have to. You may reveal your address if you would like to. Under the present statutes, the operator of a vehicle who fails to provide the required information, which includes name, license number, and address, is punishable by imprisonment of not more than 1 year or by a fine of not more than $500 or both. The senator introduced this legislation after being contacted by a constituent who expressed concern over revealing her residential address after a confrontation with the operator of the struck vehicle and believes this to be a statewide problem.
Are there any questions, comments?
Mr. Chairman, somehow I'm missing something here, I'm afraid. The operator of the vehicle gives his name and vehicle license number to the local police department or the state troopers.
What happens? Oh, excuse me, may I answer this?
Please go ahead.
Under the present statutes, you are required to give your name, your license number, and your address for those people who do not have post office boxes or cannot afford post office boxes. That means their residential address. Under this statute, you have the option of providing your residential address to the state police, not directly to the operator of the other vehicle, and therefore they may get your residential address through their lawyer or the insurance company, but are not directly provided it.
Well, what happens is you get into an antagonistic situation over, so you get an automobile, not primarily it's a confrontation over bumping fenders or something, and this person obviously has certain rights, your insurance and so on, and the state police have. But they don't want to end up in your front door that very night as a result of this problem. We had three contacts, and I thought, well, this must be a serious, more serious problem than thought.
The only thing that I would see on it is that the only thing that I see on it is that if you hit my car and I ask you for your somebody does.
What you do is, you do give name and address to the police, right?
Right.
And you have to anyway.
Yeah.
I understand that. But you may not give your personal address to this individual. It's going to take some cooling off period and so on before he gets it. That's really.
I understand what you're saying now, but I.
Yeah. No, you're
right.
You
have to give it to somebody. I mean,
oh,
yeah.
Otherwise, the guy says, I'll give it to the police some other time and adios, you know.
By and large, is most of the time, some woman that's done this and some guy that's just in the heat of rage and they get quite concerned about it. And they say that they should give the policeman a cooling off period and he gets it, but he isn't beaten on their door that night or something.
Well, I was in the heat of rage when I was informed that somebody had struck my car in the parking lot up there.
I can remember April 1st about 10 years ago. But the car was the car. The car was the same.
The car was
green.
Man, I have feet up there to see right now. April Fool's.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps this isn't artfully worded, but I think that there is a problem here. And it was brought to my attention. I don't get three contacts on something like this in a lifetime.
Move this out, Mr. Chairman, with the limited recommendations.
With the amendment.
With the amendment, yes, sir.
Judicial.
Unanimous consent has been asked. There's no objection. We will pass it on to judiciary. With the amendment is on page 1, lines 21 and 22. Delete name and on page 1, line 18. Insert name and.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Next.
Thank you for the nice presentation.
Yes, thank you. That was nice. I'd like to take House Concurrent Resolution Number 2. There's several people here on that.
Let me call Representative Rosenberg. We thought it would be coming up last
Saturday. Oh.
You'll be here just a moment.
Okay. There's several people here on House Concurrent Resolution Number 2, so my thought was to have this taken up so people don't have to sit here while we get into a more complicated issue. I might mention that we have prepared a proposed committee substitute at Senator Eliason's request to include handicapped persons in the measure. Rules do not restrict us in the Senate from changing the title of a concurrent resolution of the other House. I don't know where Representative Rusendorf is, but Martin Nussbaum, I guess, is first.
Well, you're staying right with the subject at hand, so there's no
problem
with that.
Yeah.
It's just whether it's different. Something that we just while we're sitting here, down here on line 29, we had quite a discussion when we first passed this resolution.
Larry, excuse me, sir. Larry, are you going to testify in some of the license we have for?
I can, but he's right on the bathroom.
Okay.
And I'll
ask him. Excuse
me, sir. We had quite a discussion about what handicapped meant, and you don't want people with a broken arm, some 19-year-old kid with a broken arm, or some old fossil like me with a sprained ankle.
Marty, why don't you come on up? That's a good question to ask you.
Maybe we put either the word permanently or some variation thereof so that we can identify what the handicap is.
I think we're relating this to an established process. Please go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Marty Nussbaum, presently acting director of the Alaska Marine Highway System. Welcome the opportunity to be here today. Addressing House Concurrent Resolution Number 2 concerning senior citizens travel on ferries and hearing the testimony that I've been involved with before in the House. Representative Rusendorf, I think I understand exactly what he's attempting to do, and that is to provide travel for senior citizens primarily within Alaska for relatives of Lassiter's to visit one another. That's the reason that the resolution is limited to what we call the feeder vessels, a Connie Aurora type vessel. We have no problem with that, Mr. Chairman. We have a few concerns that extending the practice that we have now in the winter to the summer months could possibly benefit more tourists than our local residents. We're not sure that that's exactly what we want to do. The other problem that has faced us before is traveling on a space-to-space basis, because the travel in the wintertime doesn't, there's plenty of room and we don't have a space available problem. We're concerned that perhaps in the summer someone may have to get bumped off in the middle of their trip. However, again, with feeder vessels, they're not normally that full, so we don't see any big problem in that respect. Unless organized tour groups attempt to take advantage of the system to reduce their costs on mainline vessels. And along that line, we could have some confusion as to what a feeder vessel is or the difference between the names of the vessels to someone who's from outside. I'm not sure.
Now we have to
set the rate.
If you open this up to travel by, I don't think you can just restrict it to only Alaska. You have to restrict it to everybody. Or you have to open it up to everybody.
That's
because you're using federal funds in the operation of the main highway system. So what you're going to do is you're going to get a tour group from Pittsburgh of 100 people trying to get on these boats.
I think that was your concern.
Yeah, that's correct, sir.
And that's why you'd have it only on feeder lines, is that it?
That's right.
Yeah, what?
However, when something of this sort gets out, so to speak, usually the reference to feeder vessels or the vessel's name gets dropped, and we can see some confusion here.
The analysis that we have that lists the vessel says free senior citizen passage for a full 12 months could approximate a loss of revenue of $175,000 each year. Is that based on this particular resolution, or this would be free across the board without on a space available basis?
This is based on this particular resolution, okay. Extending the travel.
Okay. Marty, why do we have a zero fiscal note? You submitted a fiscal note dated January 26, 1983, to the House, which gave a zero fiscal impact.
The impact, there would be no operating cost impact, Mr. Chairman. It would not increase our operating costs. It would merely reduce our revenues. Our revenues.
Well, fiscal note is supposed to indicate loss of revenue also.
I believe, Mr. Chairman, that our intent was to indicate on the fiscal note that the information was on the attached analysis.
Center.
What's the age limit on this?
65.
And why don't we change the language so we don't have any constitutional problem here and say number of handicapped and resident Alaskans 65 years of age or over. So then whatever the residency, and if the least residency you can have, for voting is 30 days, so I don't imagine somebody just come up and stay 30 days to travel on the ferries.
Could you do that under federal funding?
I'm not sure, Mr. Chairman. That's something I think we'd want to clear with the Department of Law.
The sponsor is here. Representative Grusendorf, why don't you stay there, Marty? If you would come up and discuss your resolution with us, you want to hear something.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I just got in on the last part here in that one question dealing with Alaska residents, and we kicked this around quite a bit last year, and we ran into some constitutional problems, and that's the fact that we are Alaska Marine Highway. And with that in mind, we receive a lot of federal funds, as Senator Ray is well aware of. A lot of these are construction funds as well for the vessels themselves. And we felt that this would cause some very serious problems for us in the long run. But this particular bill addresses the shuttle ferries, and the shuttle ferries, or the feeder ferries, are between Alaskan ports themselves. And the chances of a non-resident 65-year-old taking advantage of the system would not be as great as you're talking about the main line. There will be an occasional person or two that will do this, but let's face it, as a rule, these people who are non-resident 65-year-old Alaskans traveling to these destinations that we're talking about, the smaller communities, probably are a relative of someone in one of the communities or other. There's possibility of...
How does the system now work?
You and I are talking the same, Ben.
Yes.
We're talking the same line. I mean, to eliminate the words older Alaskans here so that we don't come into a constitutional problem.
Has that been changed?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, and maybe Senator Ray is correct. In my original, or
what is it? What I discussed was never older Alaskans. I think somebody got carried away with the... Now, it's in the original, page 17, 18. Page 1, line 17, 18. It says older Alaskans.
That's only placed in there in the committee substitute. It certainly was not to be in that. And we argued that it not be included in that resolution. And Marty will remember that conversation we had on that particular topic, that we did not want to include that.
Mr. Chairman, where I think the only problem is in the committee substitute would be on line 22, where you're saying older Alaskans. And I think the rest of it is...
It's also 15.
And line 15.
Line 11 does specifically designate 65 years of age.
Then we want to say Alaskans.
Alaskans should just be older persons.
Senior citizens. And just to protect the ferry system, I think we put in there senior citizens, resident senior citizens and all that. That'll protect them, because you might get a group that will come up here, fly up here, a group of 50 senior citizens, and then just get on one of your feeders and go traveling around just to take a trip for 30 days or 5 days or 6 days, and you'd be in one mess then.
Yeah, let me ask a question. Do feeder lines come under federal law or not, federal regulations?
Yes, sir.
So how could we specify a resident there?
Senior residents of the state residents.
But
senior citizens, residents.
My understanding is that's just like saying Alaskans.
No. You can establish a residency within a 30-day period.
I see heads shaking. We have an attorney present. We have two attorneys present, but we have the Attorney General's office present. Would you give an off-the-cuff response to the discussion, if you will?
As to the definition of residency, Mr.
Chairman? Well, whatever. No. Thank you. No. That would be helpful. But in terms of whether we'd be encroaching on any federal problems if we wrote in resident of Alaska or Alaskan resident, or just the word resident, into the resolution. I don't know if you've been following the discussion.
Well, I've been listening generally. I would hesitate to venture an opinion. I think that there is some substantial concern there, but unfortunately, it's not my area of expertise.
Well,
I'd hesitate to offer.
Thank you.
Let me pose a question to him.
Go ahead.
If you put in there resident of the state, would there be a constitutional, and there could be a constitutional problem there as well, because they don't require to be a resident of the state to go on I-50 or I-40, do they?
I think if you're getting federal funding, then there's some serious concern there for potential problems.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with Senator Rainey. Assistant Attorney General that there's no, we have stated so many, for so many years that this is an extension of the highway system, and to deny somebody on almost any, on practically any basis, access to the highway system on the basis of residency, I think would probably fly in the face of all precedent.
And there's so much at stake, we certainly
would. We're not doing real well back east now.
Yeah, but I can see the headlines. Go to Alaska, ride free on ferries. Jesus Christ, that's all we need is that now.
Well, this is space available, isn't it?
That's right.
The proposal.
Yeah, but the media won't say that.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Yeah, that is when we were working on this resolution, we originally were discussing the possibility of having senior citizens travel 12 months of the year on all of the ferry lines, including the mainliners and then the feeder ferries. And then in discussing the problems of package tours and things that have to line things up from port to port, which would come out of Seattle or Rupert, we decided the best way we could skirt and avoid that would be using the smaller feeder ferries that do not have staterooms. To my knowledge, there's only one that has staterooms, and I believe that's the Tuscumina. Of course, that services the Alaska Peninsula and down into the Aleutians, and you wouldn't have too many tour groups that would be heading it down in that direction, nor would there be the accommodations for them.
Space available, does it?
Yeah.
Space available.
Yeah. And the projected loss of revenue, I believe, was about $175,000. But we must remember, Mr. Chairman, that we're talking about space available. And if the ferry pulls away from the dock and there's space available, we have not really lost any revenue at all.
But then you're losing the revenue that the person that's going to travel to pay is going to travel for free.
There would be some.
If they would have traveled otherwise.
Mr. Chairman, I think it would be appropriate to have the Southeast Legislative Report back to this committee at the beginning of next session to the implementation of this program and how it worked.
I'm not sure you would
call. Mr. Chairman, of course, there's a ferry that also is up there in Southwest, and there's one use of that ferry that has some concern to some of us in the summer months, and that is the fact that it uses a tour vessel to go look at the Columbia Glacier and is not servicing the original intent of the state of Alaska for our transportation mode, and that's the only vessel, to my knowledge, that takes reservation shuttle ferry is that vessel up there that services that area. Is that the Bartlett?
That's the Bartlett.
Bartlett. And then once in a while in Southeast, if there's a land sale or in particular the Haynes Fair, they will take reservations. Otherwise, it's basically a walk-on type of arrangement.
I would certainly solve that problem. Thank you very much. Thank you, Ben. If you have another meeting.
Yeah, I have a very angry finance chairman up there.
Okay. We're considering an amended version to also include the handicapped persons. Would you, as author of the original resolution, have any comment on that? Senator Lyson is going to propose that now.
Mr. Chairman, I looked at the Senate committee substitute for the resolution that I presented here, and I see no problem with it. I was my concern on the House side was that I didn't want to make it so overwhelming that I ended up with nothing.
Yeah, okay. You got it through the House. Congratulations.
Is this a year?
Senator Lyson, do you want to discuss the inclusion of handicapped persons?
Is there a handicap back again?
Maybe the more I say, the less chance I have of passing it.
We went through all this
two years
or whatever it was.
That is
the same thing. The handicap, yeah. Who's going to define what the handicap is?
Maybe shall we report on what's happened since then? Chairman?
Go ahead, please.
We've done some research into if, in fact, they have implemented our resolution they have, and they've established a system to determine who these people were. And at the present time, there's 59 people in the state of Alaska have this pass. And which is not going to overwhelm the system, I'm sure. So then as much as that the handicapped have moved forward with the elderly on a free pass basis, I would hope that we could include them in this or other resolution. So we're talking 59 people the rest of the time.
How is the handicap defined? Senator Ray earlier asked this. Does that include a broken arm or a sprained ankle?
Do you remember the language? I can't remember what the language was.
We're getting simplified here. The
right here.
It's on the attachment with the paper clip. Handicap. Okay.
Their termination.
What is it?
For 2 years.
Okay. The application blank there. Okay, well, right. The definition is persons having physical or mental impairments that substantially limit one or more major life activities, such as caring for oneself, performing manual tasks, or working.
Scratch that list.
And now, what's the procedure for obtaining a handicapped person's pass now?
We will have them fill out this application. I believe there's a place for it to be certified by a physician, and then we will issue the pass. It's relatively simple.
The physician has to okay it, right?
That's correct.
Because I can't see a mental patient filling it up.
We've had a few.
I'm not making disparaging, but it just seemed funny to, you know, get somebody
here.
Santi Lyson, there's another meeting. Are there any questions or comments?
I'll move it out with individual recommendations. Knock out the older Alaskans.
Make a senior citizen.
Senior citizens.
Tough call. I would want to. We're ready to move it out to approve it. Would you like to make a real brief statement? But we're going to act. We're going to act favorably anyway. So.
Well, that's good.
So don't say too much. You may change your minds.
Oh, I'll tell you how much fun it is when we start getting on. You know, at Ketchikan, and then all along the way at every village. Some of the older Alaskans, or older seniors, Alaskan senior citizens, will get on, and we start visiting, and we know we're looking at one another. You know who is. So then we get over to Haynes and get off, and we'll have two potlucks there. One will be at the VFW, and the other will be at the Native group. They'll have potlatch. And then the Native people will talk with us about when they were kids, you know, and what it was like. And maybe some of them live in Canada. And it's very exciting. And, of course, they have a dance, too. But this is something which, if we could do all the around space permissible, would be wonderful. And I'm sure that the older Alaskans Commission and our Alaska senior citizens would much appreciate it. And the only living relative I have lives over Craig, so I'd be over, he's a year old now, and I'd be able to get over and see him often.
I wonder if the witness could give us a little more firmer support for this.
Well, you want us to have fun, though.
Yes, I do. With those corrections, Mr. Chairman, I'd move it out with the recommendations.
Do pass.
Thank you. Unanimous. Thank you very much. Thank you all for testifying.
The year or two, Senator Ray, I'll be right in.
I'm figuring on going this afternoon. Face space available.
Next, we have an old friend on prison overcrowding, and we have Michael Stark here. Why don't you come on up? And Dave, would you explain to the community please, what has been arrived at so far?
Yes, I met with Mr. Stark and a representative of the Division of Corrections, and we worked out the committee substitute, which you have for you. As one memo of 24th states, this bill would release a substantial larger number of prisoners. Would release approximately 15 more felons and somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 misdemeanors. As you may recall, there was concern on the committee that people who had committed lesser crimes be released first. We designed the release criteria for misdemeanants such that misdemeanants with This means eligible for release, but had to be serving a sentence of 20 days or longer and have served half of that sentence. That would exclude, among others, those who were serving minimum sentence for drunk driving offenses on the first or second offense, which are minimum 2 to 3 day and 10 day sentences. There were a number of other changes, chiefly attempted to shorten the waiting period after the emergency is first found to exist. If I remember correctly, the total period was in the original bill 47 days. This shortens it to 30 days. We made some changes in the release criteria for felons, chiefly no longer requiring that they be incarcerated for the entire 25-day waiting period. That was to bring it in line with the misdemeanor provisions that we had. That, in fact, does not release any more felons. The additional 15 felons that would be released are accounted for by essentially lengthening, allowing felons who are within 120 days of release to qualify. In the original bill, felons with 90 days remaining. Let's see. Oh, we also made one technical change, There was an oversight in the original draft that, which would probably have excluded those convicted under the old criminal code, and we made this applicable to them. Mr. Stark is certainly familiar with this and probably answered further questions.
Did you want to add anything to what David has said?
Only that I've spoken with Director of Corrections, Roger Endell, at length. He's familiar with all of the changes and asked me to inform the committee that he supports all the changes. As you'll remember, the problem of overcrowding in prisons begins long before you exceed the, you attain an emergency capacity level. Anytime you exceed 90 or 95% of your operating capacity, you're already in an overcrowding situation, and you start classifying prisoners to available beds rather than to the appropriate security level institutions. And this bill, this law, if passed, would only go into effect after the emergency level, which will be established by regulation, is exceeded for 30 days.
Jesus Christ. This is dynamite. This is a dynamite thing.
Well, again, also, they're not released. If the prisoners that are released from incarceration early are released on supervised probation or parole, there will be the Division of Corrections, and hopefully soon to be Department of Corrections, obviously is conscious of the potential public concern and the need for close supervision of these individuals. And again, these individuals are those who will be nonviolent felons and misdemeanors who have served at least a half of their sentence, and who will be shortly released anyway, within 120 days or less, will be released and out on the street anyway. Those are the only ones who will be affected by this bill.
Is that true? There are a lot of people, as my understanding, there's a lot of people that are eligible for probation now and won't take it because of the stringency of the regulations of probation, or parole, whichever one they call it.
I think the parole is what you're referring to, sir. Yeah. And I know that's something that Mr. Endell is concerned about.
The question then is what I'm trying to get at is, you tell a guy you're released, and he says, "No, I'm not. I'm staying right here and serving them."
I don't think we can force him under this.
Then they'd stay right there, wouldn't they?
I don't think we're going to see. Again, the prisoners who would go into parole would only be those who would be released to parole anyway at the end of. If they had a parole date within 120 days.
Could I pursue that for a minute?
Sure, go ahead.
It's my understanding that if the number of prisoners that are eligible for parole right now, if they would take that parole, the overcrowding would cease as of right now.
That's not entirely correct. And,
all right.
I think your facts are largely correct. There are approximately 150 prisoners in our system now out of the approximately 1,500 that we have who are eligible for parole under the statutory eligibility, but that doesn't mean that the parole board has granted them parole release. It means that they are eligible to apply for parole, and I think the perception among many of them is that why waste their time, their parole board is not going to release them anyway.
That's a difference in terms of the national...
We're going to release them, but we're going to release them just because we convicted somebody else, and they need the space.
Well, I think that we may soon see some changes in the practice of the parole board anyway. I know that many other states that have focused on the overcrowding problem and have enacted overcrowding bills, some of them require the parole board to actually release certain prisoners. This would simply, by operation of law, require it in another fashion. And they, again, would be supervised by probation or parole officers.
What public safety problem would ensue from this?
Well, in the area of felons, again, we're dealing with any felon convicted of an assault or violent offense would be excluded. It would not be released early. And we're talking about simply property offenders in the felony category. So I don't see any likelihood of serious concern there. Again, the fact that they are close to release anyway, that they're a nonviolent category, and that there's going to be supervision. In the misdemeanor area, we include all misdemeanors, but again, we require that they have served at least half their sentence, which means that they would be within 120 days of release also. Even though we don't spell that out, that's what that means practically, because the longest misdemeanor sentence could be is 1 year. And they have to serve at least a half, so that would leave 6 months, and then with the computation of good time, they would be within 120 days of release anyway. And there probably would be, there's the possibility that there would be a few assaulted misdemeanors that might be eligible. But those are the ones that certainly the probation officers will be concentrating their supervision resources on. And I can't emphasize enough how concerned corrections is that this thing work if it actually is passed, that there not be a public outcry against it. So the supervision element is going to be reinforced as much as possible.
Mr. Chairman, I just shudder when I can see that, and it isn't because somebody wants it to happen, but I can just see that the first time that it does happen, that some guy will be let out and he commits another crime, or he commits maybe a worse crime, a crime against the person, because of certain matters that have happened while he's been incarcerated, and you just let him go because the prisons are overcrowded and the legislature says that's the best thing to do. Boy, I don't know. I don't think I can hack that.
I share your concern. The only reasonable response to that concern, though, is that these people are going to be released within a short time anyway, and you can't, when they're out, if they're going to commit a crime, there's very little, I mean, if somebody, you know what they say, if somebody wants to assassinate the president, they're going to need to stop it.
But the argument that I'm making is that if he's let out prior to the time he's supposed to be let out, that's what the public, and then the public never gets, they get the right information a lot of times, but the connotation they put on it is entirely incorrect. And as such, it'll be some guy that was sentenced for 10 years and he only served 20 days and they let him out and he was out on the street and killed somebody because he, oh God.
The effort that, the main point behind this bill is hopefully a recognition that the problem of overcrowding in our prisons has to be, the responsibility for it and how we deal with it has to be shared by all three branches of government. And the governor has taken that on his shoulders introducing this bill. And the legislature, if it passes, would share in that responsibility. And in terms of the litigation we have going right now, of which overcrowding is a major issue, in the Cleary case, this would be one response that the court would have to take some responsibility for. And that way it would be shared by all three branches of government. Otherwise, we're likely to see what's happened in other states where the court simply orders corrections to release several hundred prisoners.
Good. Let them take the responsibility.
Well, they take the responsibility, but then we run the risk of danger to the public safety is greater in that kind of situation. Putting aside who shares the blame, I think our overall concern has to be public safety. We can't put aside the concerns that I'm sure you all have, and that certainly the executive branch shares for the public sentiment.
What about an alternative of sort of establishing the foundation for this process, but having judiciary, having the parole board, or having sort of have a screening process so that prisoners who were sentenced a year before or 3 years before and are close to release or are close to eligibility for parole would go through a screening process?
Well, in a sense, this bill does have a screening process by eliminating certain offenders from consideration. problem with focusing on the parole board, which some other states have done, is that you have murderers who are eligible for parole. You have rapists who are eligible for parole. Those people will not be released early under this bill, and they might under some other form when the parole board takes action.
I'm just trying to shunt the responsibility over on the other branches.
I understand your concern. I don't know of any other. This, we've looked at every other state, what they've done, and there are at least five now or more, five or six, and probably more than that now because I know a couple have recently done similar things. And the approach we have, I think, is the better one of all in terms of having any practical effect at the same time minimizing the risk involved. Prisoners who are released on probation now, I mean, we have a problem of recidivism like any other state. What do they say? Something like around 33% of our offenders come back now. I question, first of all, I mean, the fact that these people will be released anyway, if one of them, during the time that he's out on an early form of probation, which is what this bill provides, if that's somehow going to come back on this bill and the members of the legislature vote for it.
Well, I'm personally not concerned. But
he's taking the practical view of it and not the real view. I'm taking the textbook theory, which is fine. But
your concerns certainly are not the same ones that I share personally, and I don't intend to say that your concerns aren't valid. But I don't know, if we go just on the concerns that you have, how we're ever going to deal with the problem in a realistic way.
If you deal with the problem in a realistic way by building enough facilities and the proper time frame in order to do these things instead.
Well, $120,000 a bed, can we afford to do that?
Well, why don't we just make a big barbed wire enclosure, put all the good people inside, and let the rest of them run around loose?
Senator Lodi, what's your reaction?
Just listening to the arguments. I share some of Senator Ray's concerns. I certainly see some problems with it. I don't know that I'm ready to pass it from committee immediately. Not without further scrutiny. It has all the potentials for a disaster built into it, and certainly the legislature will be held accountable for it.
What further testimony or issues would you like to have brought before the committee?
Why don't you just sit up? I don't want to suggest to the chair what the chair should do. I would like to talk with Mr. Endell, who I have great respect for openers.
As far as I'm concerned, Mr. Chairman, if you think that this bill is ready for the floor, I certainly would vote to put it out of this committee, but that doesn't guarantee what my vote or what my action is going to be on the floor.
I agree with Senator Ray, certainly.
If you want to pass it out, it's fine.
Well, I just want to pass it out. I feel also the need for more. I'm concerned about fiscal note, but I can take that out of finance.
I'd move it out with individual recommendations.
Is there objection? Thank you very much, brother. I think you could perform a real service if you would pass the concerns of committee members on to Roger.
I'll do that.
And suggest that in one form or another, Roger respond to the concern.
I can't believe that the criteria of allowing a guy go is because we got too many guys in jail, so we'll let some of them go. I don't get that.
You're putting me in a position of signing to pass, huh?
No, you don't have to.
No,
well, just take it goes to the committee. And as long as it has one to pass.
Has one in finance.
From finance, mm-hmm. It's all right.
What we're doing, if I can make a comment. May I make one comment?
Sure.
What we're essentially doing is simply saying that the sentences of these individuals, again, nonviolent felons, are going to be from 120 days to 1 day less than the sentence that was imposed by the judge. That's all we're doing. They're at the very tail end of their sentence anyway.